Item C, county administration. Elizabeth, I believe Wendy says the volume is low up there?
It's a little bit low, if you could speak up.
Is this better?
Yes.
That's a little better.
That's actually a lot better.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Elizabeth Nielsen, again, Deputy County Administrator for Siskiyou County. And I will just tee up this item. We do have Scott Soyce with Tule Lake Irrigation District here to speak on the item. And we also have Brian Shinomi, Siskiyou County's Director of the Office of Emergency Services. And so Siskiyou County, who I believe the three counties, were made recently aware of an issue going on within the Tule Lake area, specifically regarding soil profile collapse. Scott will provide a much better background, and so I'll turn over to him. And also, I will note that on this item, we are asking that the boards approve a letter which was included in the agenda packet. And so with that, I'll turn over to Mr. Soyce.
Good morning. Thank you for being here. And it's a pretty unique situation probably when it comes to counties to have three counties that will work as closely together as they will for us here.
If you could just speak your name for the record.
Scott Soyce, S-U-S.
Thank you.
All right. I guess I'm on the record. So this is a situation that's been 20 years in the making, 23 years in the making here in the Klamath Basin. And some of you are aware of it, and I'm just going to provide a little bit of background about what is kind of the, we've had the canary in the coal mine for several years watching our roads have collapse. If you go out east-west road here east of Tule Lake towards Sheepy Ridge, you go through about three elevation changes. That used to be a flat road. No longer is, and the automatic assumption if you're in the state of California is the reason that there's an elevation change is because of deep water extraction. The rest of California isn't a 6 million year old lake bed full of duck manure and tules like we are. High organic soils tend to make this our soil profile is different than you are in the rest of California. What we're dealing with here is shallow subsidence, and that's the dewatering of our soil. So brief history on us, 6 million years of duck manure and tules, a lake bed until the early 1900s when the reclamation project was developed. The strata of the soil that we farm and live on was kept alive, I'll say, by the water that was put through the irrigation system and applied to the fields. That's changed starting in 2001 when we went through water shutoffs, we've not gone through a full allocation of water, and we've all changed to irrigation systems. We've made improvements on the farm that was inspired by EQIP and $50 million that was K-EQIP money to just apply to the fields what was utilized by the crop. So that's been the goal, is water efficiency across everything. Tule Lake Irrigation District, the Klamath Project, is 93% efficient. And the reason they're 93% efficient is because there is no deep water loss here in the project. We have drains, we have supply ditches, what's applied to the fields and then comes off of those fields after a field has been irrigated. There's no loss off of that. The drain ditches collect the water back, A, from the soil, and B, from anything that might be spill off of a field when it was being flood irrigated, and then pumped back up and utilized by the next guy down the ditch. So that happens 7 times down through the project from the top to the bottom, and that's why we achieve a 93% efficiency. That's what kept our soil alive. That's what kept our foundations of our houses stable. That's what kept our roads flat and level. And as of now, we don't have that anymore. You can dig down 6-7 feet here and not find moisture in that soil profile because we're only applying what the crop needs and there is no full soil profile below that. So where I used to be able to dig a hole out in the field and find water in the bottom of it at 2 feet in the morning and have something I could play in as a kid, that doesn't exist anymore. Nobody gets to see that. We do not have a shallow profile of water. So where we're at now, is that this has moved into town, and it's gone to the heart of our school district, and right to the gymnasium. And you can walk into the Tulalip High School gym now, and you can see a dish in the bottom of it. You can see that it rolls to one corner. You can look at the doors when you walk into the building, and they sit askew because our schools are settling. We have devoided the soil of water for over 20 years, and it's starting to hit home. And it's not just at the high school. It's at chimneys on the sides of houses. It's house foundations. It's the roads. It's telephone poles. It's the National Wildlife Refuge headquarters that has had a shift in it as well. And so now they're building out on the lake bed, of all places, where they're probably going to have more severe issues as this continues to happen. So the letter that you have in front of you, I think that you probably have seen a copy of the community letter that was written, and it had the school district representatives. It had John Crawford from TID. We had the fire chief, who's essentially going to be the one that condemns the building. We've asked for a state engineer to come and look at this stuff, and we've asked OES to step in and try to help us find funding to be able to stabilize the building, or if we have to condemn it, to start over. But this issue isn't going to go away. It's going to continue as long as there's not water on the land. I think that all the water going down the river this spring, were we to fill sump 1A back up, sump 1B completely full, irrigate our fields, flood our fields the way that it used to be, we could get that soil profile back. But all the drainage water that came down the Lost River this year that we ran through the ditches and eventually ended up in the refuge, those drains used to hold water year-round. Used to ice skate on them as a kid, and we don't do that anymore. There's no water in those drains. They look as barren as the field is on top above it during the wintertime now, and that's because we have lost that aquifer. So we're looking for support. This is a moment in time where we get to say the consequences of doing something in the name of one species down the river or up in the lake above us is having public safety issues, it's having human resource issues, it's having wildlife issues. There's a whole bunch of things developed from that are now a problem for us right here in Tulalip where you're sitting. And we're probably the canary in the coal mine for the other areas to the north of us that probably won't have as severe of an issue, but here on the lake bed, it's a big issue. So what we're asking for is letters from the Board of Supervisors, from the tri-counties, from the road departments. I think Elizabeth she's helped a lot. This has been a tough time of year to try to deal with all of that with spring planting and everything going on, but we sure appreciate Elizabeth's help in doing all that and the support of the boards, the people that came to the meeting in early, I think it was April. I don't know. Days are running together. But anyway, the support that we've received since then has been fantastic, and we hope for continued support in trying to highlight this issue and keep it from turning into a conversation that is untruthful, because the truth is 20 years of devastation from not delivering water to the project is hitting home. You want me to go to the other one? Okay, so that's one issue that we'll address. The other one that we wanted bring up is talking about Sump 1A and Sump 1B in the refuge. Sump 1A
is an empty sump this year.
There is no water there. And it would take, Brad, correct me if I'm wrong, but about 55,000 acre feet of water to fill Sump 1A with the profile that is out there, the cracks, the subsidence that we've gotten in that, because when they took the water off of it, what used to be filled with water in between the soil particles is now air, and so that's collapsed. It's not necessarily a bad thing. We were getting silted in Sump 1A, but at any rate, we don't have water there. That's a key component to trying to deliver water to the Q system, which supplies the southwest portion of the lease lands, and so we have a large area of ground out there that cannot be irrigated. And we entered into a conversation early this spring with Fish and Wildlife, with Paul Souza and Greg Austin and others, And the whole point of the conversation was trying to build a wetland, trying to find a way to have a sustainable wetland that was in someone in the Tule Lake National Wildlife Refuge. Early in the spring, before we got the tremendous snow and rains that we got that changed the course of this year, we were trying to identify 600 acres that we could have a cascading wetland that Brad Kirby kind of designed up with Mark Staunton, and it was a great approach to it. That's changed. We've got more water now. We've flooded a bunch of ground out there in different areas, just trying to have co-op lands and be able to produce waterfowl. Almost everything in the lease lands now is green, and that's because of the rains that we had this spring, where we went and planted grain behind the rain that we got. And so we have crops emerging out there, and it looks really good if you fly over it. But come July 1, it's going to look somewhat different. That's going to dry up. We are trying to identify a block of water that we can provide a larger, more sustainable wetland, which would be Sub 1B, and have conversations with Fish and Wildlife, with Greg Austin and John Vredenburg, about how to do that and to keep a surface area elevation that provides a wetland out there for the wildlife, and at the same time allows farming out in the leases. We're still not going to be able to take care of that southwest portion of the lease lands, which is what I refer to as the Q system. That's still going to be dry. But the reality is there's not enough of an allocation of water to irrigate the way that we have to irrigate in the refuge system and provide full crops. And there's going to be a reduced row crop acres out there this year. Most of it's planted to grain and alfalfa. What we asked for, and why I'm bringing this up to you, and especially with Matt sitting here to hear this part of the conversation, because I think it's potentially a pot of money that this makes sense for. Those areas that are not going to get water still have an allocation. They still have a percentage of water that they should be able to expect. It's just not deliverable. We just can't get it there. And even within the proper part of the refuge, within the part of the project that we, or the part of the refuge that we can get water to, there's not going to be enough water to fully irrigate crops. And so the idea is, just like we have a drought response agency program that happens on the private lands, there is not one in the refuge, but what we have proposed is a $5 million pot of money to be able to pay farmers not to irrigate their grain crops so that they can, have full crop on some of it, but some of that water is going to be meant for Sump 1B to make sure that we get through this year. With a 265 allocation that we're looking at right now, things are not going to get fully irrigated across the project. I'll just tell you that now. Things are drying out fast. We're lucky that we got to where we are without having to start irrigation, but crops are taking water now. And so the timing is imperative to try to identify that pot. TID is going to send a letter to Fish and Wildlife here, likely today. Brad will get it out on TID letterhead, but it's going to be asking for that money. We'd like to have support of the supervisors' boards, and we know you can't act on that today, but something to follow up, understanding what the purpose of that money is and why it's important. Because the reality is farmers have to make decisions in the next 10 days whether they're going to irrigate grain in the leases or their alfalfa or what they're going to do. And if they've got a third or a half, or they have ground that they can't get water to, this is a path to try to help keep them whole at a minimum. Understand that when you go out into the refuge and farm, you pay whatever you bid for that ground, which we were forced into a bid process last fall, wasn't necessarily our preference, but we got pushed into a bid process last fall where farmers had to bid their ground, and then they have to pay their TID bill regardless, which is $102 an acre that we pay for that land that we're required to pay as growers, period. And so we've got pretty big investment on it, and then we're not going to be able to get water to all of it. So this is, I hate asking for money. It's not what I want to do. I'd rather find solutions. But this is a solution to try to help out Sump 1B this year and try to keep some farmers pole that are not going to get water to begin with, so.
Any questions from Siskiyou County? Michael?
Thank you, Scott. For sump 1B, what's the required water besides 1A if the water was available?
So there is no requirement on sump 1B right now. We used to have sucker fish in sump 1A, which had an elevation. They moved them into sump 1B. They moved the sucker fish out of sump 1B and took them on a joyride somewhere. I don't even know where this fish ended up. I know where a bunch of them are. They went to about 2,000 feet in the air in a pelican's belly. But at any rate, there is no elevation requirements out there. What we have got to a point of in the conversations with Fish and Wildlife is that we're going to try to keep a two-thirds surface area, not an elevation, but a two-thirds surface area to try to provide the wetland, and that's going to go through the farming season. So it's not necessarily like we're trying to fill a full pool and we're holding a full pool. We're trying to reach a surface elevation that is only two-thirds of the surface area.
How many acre feet roughly is that?
Brad, you break up.
I'll say we got 6,000 acre feet into 1B from this fall winter, basically. I would venture to guess that's probably standing water in 1B right now is probably closer to 3,000. Okay. And it's dropping on a daily basis, slowly, but dropping. And it's dropping outside of the range of elevation that between us and Fish and Wildlife, John Bradenburg, we were discussing, because we don't have sufficient return flows. Unless myself and my crew are bad at our jobs, there's not going to be very much return flows in order to stabilize or supplement the sump throughout the summer, especially if there's less, as Scott mentioned, less irrigation.
So, trying to retain a level to prevent botulism.
No, I'm with you, but how many acre feet is that? Because I'm at a loss here.
If you're asking what we need to get through to the end of the year,
yeah,
probably 10,000 acre feet would be my best guess.
And that's in addition to the 55,000 for 1A, correct?
We're not gonna find that 55,000.
In a perfect world, if you had it.
Yeah, that's going down the river right now.
Right? Understood, but yeah. In the perfect world, if you had that water, 65,000 acre feet is what you're looking at between the two, roughly.
Well, so that 55 would be close to sufficient enough to fill 1A, and then you got to make up for ET throughout the summer on top of that. So that's what we're talking about. This 10,000, we got about 2/3 of the surface area of sump 1B full. And we're talking about probably in the ballpark of 10,000 acre feet, whether it's return flow or additional water identified in order to just counteract ET throughout the site.
Okay, I'm with you. So where I'm headed with this is, we heard earlier that with the new 42-139 or whatever it is now, that's basically an additional 90 to 100,000 acre feet of water because of that level being up. That I'm going to say it could be coming this way and meet some of the requirements that you're already talking about without having to fund a $5 million bill. Am I correct or am I all wet, literally?
No, absolutely. The buffer on the buffer last year was enough to start filling these back up. I mean, just keep diverting.
Okay, thank you.
Brandon,
No, I think it's been said.
Has he anything?
Said well.
No.
Any questions from Laura?
No, thank you.
Here?
No questions.
Okay, how about a letter for
support? I think Supervisor Cooper.
He said no.
Oh, no, okay.
Yeah. Okay, we support for a letter for Siskiyou County? Mm-hmm. Motion and a second?
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Modoc County?
Motion to approve. Second.
Aye.
Opposed?
Extension?
Motion carries.
Commissioner
DeGroote? I'll make a motion to the same. Can I have a second? And a vote yes.
Okay, so we'll get that letter out. We're all going to sign it, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. And through the chair, with regard to the second request, I think there was another letter of support. Did I hear? Is that correct on this $5
million? There was the letter of support for the $5 million and then the letter to California Office of Emergency Services regarding the soil collapse, which is already included on your agenda.
Okay.
So we do need approval for that.
So moved.
But it's already drafted.
So it's not on the agenda. We can't do it.
But the one for the soil collapse...
Yes.
Is on the agenda. Right. So that's the one we need approval for.
That was the one we just did.
That's okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Then, sorry. Okay.
Okay.
I was, yes. So there was a request for the $5 million one. Correct.
So we would need a motion to give direction.
Yes, correct.
I still move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Vote up. Whatever you want to do with it.
Chair, we can't. No, we put cannot. It on our agenda. It's not on our agenda. We can't do
we
it.
Can't
we
vote on
we're
it
giving
on.
Direction.
We're giving direction.
Well, we.
Okay, whatever you want.
We have different county councils.
That's
I
right.
guess.
Derek,
I'll sign it now.
Okay. That's where we're at with that.
So through the chair,
yep.
But can we describe in that $5 million letter that somehow, and I don't know how the other counties feel about this, but with that. New level, that 4139 or 0.2, whatever it is, it offsets what the request is actually asking for with no additional cost to the state or the federal government. So at least identify that if that mark was taken off, that water could be coming this way and solving the problem.
Yes, will do.
Move on to item 4D, County Administration.
Yes. Last item, but certainly not least, and again, I have an expert up here to talk about it, so because you don't want to hear about it from me, I would definitely hear it wrong. But this item is to discuss Clear Lake Reservoir and opportunities to utilize storage at Clear Lake Reservoir. And then there is an action item on this agenda topic, and so once Mr. Driscoll presents, I can come back up here and provide the direction to you. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Moss Driscoll, Policy Advisor for Klamath Water Users Association.
Sir, your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
My name is Moss Driscoll.
Driscoll, last name?
D-R-I-S-C-O-L-L.
Thank you.
So, thank you for being here today. I do have a short presentation just for us to look at in terms of some pictures. We'll note, I think it does bear some value to the discussion to look at these contexts and these points from a longer-term context. And so I would note the discussion, and I would start the discussion by noting that they've taken short sediment core samples from right underneath Thule Lake, where we're at today, and found that water has been on this landscape here in Thule Lake the last 3 million years. And about 2.7 to 2.6 million years ago, that water level was approximately 200 feet over where we sit today in a vast, immense lake that covered pretty much the entire basin. They estimate that temperatures were about 5 degrees centigrade warmer than they are currently, so quite a bit warmer than we are today. So this landscape has fundamentally changed over time, and of course man has fundamentally altered it. And I think we need to start thinking about some of those opportunities that we have to look at how we are managing this landscape, just as was talked about in terms of groundwater and the soil profile. So I'll just go, this is Clear Lake Reservoir. This is just to the east of us here. You can see the original dam here in the foreground, earthen dam, which was replaced in 2002-2003 by the Bureau of Reclamation for a dam safety project. We'll also note, too, you see essentially two lobes here. You see a big pool in the foreground with a channel coming to the dam, and then beyond it, out by those, out by Bumphead, the double humped mountain there, you see the west lobe of Clear Lake. So it has historically, and it does today, have two lobes, as it's termed. Just some basic facts. Huge watershed above this area. We're talking 575 square miles, most of which is federally owned. Clear Lake was constructed beginning in 1909, prior to really any conception of exactly how the water would be used, but knowing that it was necessary in order to reclaim the land we're standing on today. At the time of the project's origins, there was about 30 feet of water where we're sitting today, and the concept was to hold back the Lost River and to ensure that land could gradually be dried up and turned into productive farmland. So Clear Lake was constructed for that purpose, as well as for delivering water for irrigation purposes. The annual inflow is about 130,000 acre feet, varying widely. It has, like I noted, historically been a source of irrigation water since 1922 for lands in Lancha Valley and Nuna Valley, of approximately 10,000 acres between the two districts. As noted, and I think probably as people are familiar with, those districts irrigate and their return flows end up in the Lost River, end up at Lost River Diversion Dam, if not diverted beforehand, are diverted either at Wilson Dam down the Lost River or through Station 48, and then are reused here within Tule Lake Irrigation District. So the return flows from these reservoirs, from the irrigation associated with these reservoirs, is used throughout the project, and that goes back to the point we heard earlier about water being reused within the project, you know, an estimated 7 times. I noted inflows vary significantly from year to year. You can have over 300,000 acre feet come in through Willow Creek, the primary tributary to Clear Lake. And in very dry years, we see that figure even less than 20,000. So tremendous volumes at times and then tremendous droughts at others. I noted there's a huge upstream watershed. There's also a number of larger impoundments, as well as more crude and rudimentary earthen dams, little berms in the middle of marshy meadows, all sorts of little impoundments going really, you know, back to the 19th century and into the current time. There hasn't been much development in the last 30 years approximately, although there was a period about 30 years ago where there was a number of improvements made primarily by Fish and Wildlife, or sorry, U.S. Forest Service, with funding from Ducks Unlimited for waterfowl improvement projects. There's goose and duck nesting habitat up there. I'll talk about it a little bit in a second. We'll see some charts, but there's a healthy population of suckers up there in the reservoir itself, and spawning and inhabiting the watershed to the extent that there's permanent water bodies in there. Of course, there are times that some of those impoundments go dry, and those suckers, that population of suckers in, you know, Strawberry Reservoir or what have you, is lost. But then it can be recolonized once those tributary connections are reestablished and populations from Clear Lake can reestablish them. So in the late 80s and early 1990s, Mark Buettner and a colleague, Mark Buettner with Klamath Tribes, did a number of surveys up there, and they found suckers everywhere. They were in every little impoundment, every little creek, spawning at spots here and there. One thing we talk about sometimes is the need for habitat for suckers, and the fact that Upper Klamath Lake does not seem to be an area where they survive and can reproduce to adulthood, and maybe there's a need to look elsewhere. We have a huge watershed that is great sucker habitat by all indications. Just an idea of noted the historical landscape and how it's changed, and I should note that Clear Lake was not connected to Lake Modoc. It's always been its own separate little area. This is a map, really the best map there is, of Clear Lake at the time of the project's authorization. And again, you can see the two lobes here on the far top right-hand corner is the Lost River, the beginning of the Lost River, as it sits today, and the dam would be right about where the word lost is. And you can see how Willow Creek, the main tributary, would come in from the east, and it would flow into what is now termed the East Lobe, which would flow into the West Lobe. And the West Lobe was generally the deeper little impoundment or water body, upwards of about 13 feet deep at its far western end. And you can see there, just by the hashing in this map, what the cartographer was trying to depict. This is a marshy meadow. It was a marshy meadow complex with a much smaller, about 8,000, 10,000 acre shallow water body. Here's a picture from 1905. I'm harking you back. There are ones from the site, modern day pictures of the site. That would be comparable, but I'd harken you back to the photo we saw at the beginning of the presentation of a vast water body dominating two lobes of area versus this. And you can see some of the marshy meadow in the foreground versus the deeper water in the background up against the bump heads. So that was what it was historically. And then this upland area. So I want to talk about just a little bit about, not get too detailed, but this is just for depiction. This is based on records from the Bureau of Reclamation. This is the annual evaporative and seepage losses associated with Clear Lake Reservoir. Evaporation is tremendous in its own right, and the seepage is significant, although much lesser degree in comparison in terms of overall volume. For this period, 1974 to 2013, which is a pretty good period of record in terms of including some wetter periods as well as some drier periods, the average annual evaporative and seepage losses associated with Clear Lake Reservoir was just over 90,000 acre feet. And you can see, of course, that varies significantly when the reservoir is smaller because of lesser inflows, there's less evaporation. Multiple years of drought, smaller and smaller water surface area, smaller and smaller evaporative losses compared to, obviously, the alternative. Just for context, last year, the estimate is there was 45,000 acre feet of evaporative losses, just evaporative losses, at a Clear Lake Reservoir. And probably the overall number in terms of evaporation and seepage was probably about 60. Not a drop left the reservoir. The gates never opened. All that water is gone. The common expression is that it takes about 100,000 acre feet of inflow to Clear Lake to get 30,000 acre feet of deliverance. I just thought this was maybe a helpful context. 2022 was a really crazy year on a lot of fronts, particularly for West Side operations in terms of the diversions from Upper Klamath Lake and the Klamath River, which is basically what is depicted in blue. This is the cumulative per acre and acre foot per day representation, cumulative diversions between the A Canal, Station 48 operated by TID, and the two diversions operated by Klamath Drainage District. Compared to the average or the daily evaporative losses, just evaporation losses associated with Clear Lake last year, just for context. So we're talking, you know, upwards of 300 acre feet a day that is basically just burned up out there in the desert. I mentioned earlier about suckers, and I should have noted just a little bit about Clear Lake in terms of the aquatic habitat. Very turbid water, high amount of sediment in the very murky brown water, so not a lot of photosynthesis, not a lot of algae in the reservoir relatively compared to other water bodies around here. Not a lot of aquatic vegetation, essentially zero riparian habitat. So people talk about, well, we need riparian habitat for Agency Lake Barnes, Roundup Klamath Lake for these juvenile larval suckers. There's zero in Clear Lake. And we'll talk about recruitment here, and I'll just note these are some preliminary figures. I wouldn't put these in a paper, obviously USGS has not to be cited, but I present them here today just for context so you understand what kind of condition the resource is in. So these are basically hits on a sensor that is in the channel of Willow Creek, and this is picking up sensors out of tags in the bellies of suckers that have been captured and had these pit tags stuck in them. And as they go by the sensor, it reports their particular tag and their unique detection. This is a complicated table, and there's a lot of data there, as you can see, in terms of lake levels and water temperature and inflow in terms of Willow Creek. On the key, the key one is on the left-hand side. That's the unique detections per day of suckers traveling over Willow Creek, and obviously you can see the different species. And also, this also includes, there's also an array in between the two lobes, the straits, as it's referred to. So they can detect suckers going from the west lobe to the east lobe, and from the east lobe up Willow Creek. And just to show you, we've had healthy sucker spawning. This is from this spring. Even today, we're still seeing suckers travel up Willow Creek to go spawn. This is a longer-term picture of the same graphs, and 2023 is shown there on the lower right-hand corner, as well as the last 14 years. And as you can see, back in the 2000, early 2010 through really 2016, we had pretty low spawning numbers year in, year out. We've seen some very low spawning numbers more recently, 2020, 2021. The fact is, when the reservoir gets so low, the suckers physically cannot get up to Willow Creek. And I can talk about why that is, but I won't go into the specifics. But 2020 and 2021, they physically can't get to that array. Same 2015 and 2014 as well, 2010 as well. So oftentimes influenced by just the fact that they can't get to Willow Creek. Part of that, and I think it is maybe an important point, is that the channel from Willow Creek into the reservoir, it was rerouted by reclamation when the dam was built. So it's coming down towards the reservoir, and rather than going to the reservoir, it shoots off straight to the dam. And so that historical natural channel to the reservoir has basically been silted in. It's no longer accessible unless it's the reservoir's really full. But when the water level is low, the fish have to go all the way to the dam, and then they can go through this channel to get to Willow Creek. So it's not well set up for suckers trying to get up to Willow Creek right now. I thought, you know, just comparison, this is, and I won't spend a lot of time on this one, this is the Williamson River. So this is the other key population of suckers in the Klamath Basin. This is their spawning numbers on a similar setup on the Williamson. Right off the bat, I just note the index is completely different in terms of this is, we're seeing detections over 2,000 suckers per day, where the other chart was only about 600. But the long-term trends here, when we look at suckers now on Klamath Lake, and they have access every year to the Williamson. They can always spawn, presumably, up there. But 2023, again, on the right, lower right-hand corner. And this is the trend in suckers in Upper Klamath Lake. And the scientists, they know what's happening. We have 40 to 50-year-old suckers that are coming back to spawn in lower and lower numbers every year, and none of their juveniles, none of their millions, hundreds of millions of larvae are surviving. And none of the hatchery-raised suckers that are being put into the lake appear to be surviving either. So my point simply there is that we do have a population of healthy, recruiting, spawning suckers with lots of habitat in the Klamath Basin and in Clay Lake. But overall, I'll just wrap this up here, and then I'm certainly happy to take any questions. There's an expression, it's a legal term of art, in the water law, to waste water in terms of evaporative and seepage losses, and so there's consumptive, beneficial waste in terms of evaporative and seepage losses you can't prevent, and then obviously wasteful practices. But there's no question, Clear Lake was designed to waste water. So here we are in landscape. We're all fighting over water. We're all trying to figure out how to save our farms, save our communities, save our refuges, save the fish. And we're burning that water out in the desert. Evaporation, again, just evaporation alone, about 45 to 100,000 acre feet. When you include seepage, we're talking average losses on the order of about 90,000 acre feet, again with significant variation, but a good solid number there. It's important to recognize you have a historical irrigation source, people's livelihoods, farms, diversion structure, operations all depend upon this as a water source, which they don't expect to change anytime soon. And I didn't talk about it here, and I appreciate that we have Ken Sandusky from the Modoc Nation, and appreciate particularly some of the work that he's helping lead to some of the other organizations. And I'm going to talk very briefly about planning here, but significant, we all see it, we all know about it, we've heard about it, significant juniper encroachment in this watershed. You can go back to the pictures, the historical pictures. I didn't see any juniper out in that picture in 1905. If we went out there today, you'd see a whole lot. And we're piecemealing some of this stuff, mostly on private lands, and on the federal lands, they can't get the NEPA done and the cultural work done to go out there and do juniper removal projects. Mentioned the numerous impoundments and the fact that that they've been developed historically, as well as some question of, there's significant water behind those, and some question in our mind as to how they're being operated. Are they being operated consistent with some of the agreements that exist between the Forest Service and Reclamation, which I won't go into here? Nor will I try and go into the multiple ongoing planning studies that are happening right now, just dealing with the Klamath Projects area. And there's broader planning studies for the basin as a whole. There was a long-term one that was recently wrapped up by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service called the Integrated Fisheries Restoration and Monitoring Plan, which I'm not going to go into and has nothing to do with really what we're talking about here today. But my point is, there are several ongoing planning studies. There's a good one that we're working with Fish and Wildlife Service about the Lost River and about its floodplain and about Langella and Yuna Valley. But I would offer that we are missing, without going into the details, which I'd be happy to do so, but I don't think we have the time. There's a planning study missing, and it's regarding storage and storage opportunities. Klamath County has some funds and is looking with a really good engineering outfit at some of the groundwater storage opportunities like aquifer storage and recovery. There have been some other ideas raised out there by other groups in terms of off-stream storage opportunities. Going back to the 70s, Reclamation basically got to almost permitting a large reservoir on the Lost River right at the interstate boundary, Boundary Dam as it was going to be called, which they did not move forward on because of concerns over an interstate deer herd that my understanding doesn't largely exist anymore. So there's, and I could go on, there's been some prior study efforts by Reclamation. My point there is there's several plans and documents that were put on shelves, and there aren't a whole lot of utility anymore. And there's, again, noted several planning studies, Lost River, basin as a whole, dealing with fisheries that are going on. But I do think that there is a absence of one, particularly on storage. And when we look elsewhere around Oregon, you do find examples of counties playing an important role. And this is just on Oregon. I just looked on the Oregon side. I'm sure I can find many probably on the California side of counties playing a really critical role in the planning process. And so the example that I cite there was from Baker County, where they set up this WASH committee to basically go get funds from federal sources, federal and state sources, hire a really good engineering outfit to really look at these, with a steering committee comprised of people who wanted to solve problems and were solution-oriented and could get stuff done. And they're still working on their planning and storage opportunities in the Powder River Basin. So it's, but I think the example in terms of the committee, or sorry, the counties playing a leading role in storage is a good one to keep in mind. So with that being said, I have no more to present. I'm happy to answer any questions at this point.
Is there an ask involved with that? I didn't hear an ask in your presentation.
Yeah, so there is an ask, and what we're talking about, I have not gone into the particulars or the details, certainly not with county staff or county council. I know there are restrictions and considerations with respect to forming advisory committees or planning committees or what have you. I'm not wed to any technical terminology, but the ask would be, from my sample, would be that the counties designate their staff to identify what would be a suitable and acceptable planning framework or structure that the tri-counties could adopt with respect to on-stream and off-stream storage opportunities in the Lost River watershed.
Moving back to Siskiyou County, any thoughts, Michael?
I'll defer at this point to
Commissioner DeGroot?
Or Chris, Supervisor Chris.
Oh, thank you. I'll jump in. Yeah. I think everything's been said. I'd just be repeating stuff. I think you said it real well, and I would want to give direction as a board that we do exactly what you've proposed, and ours as staff and what looks up. There's a lot of water we're losing. It's something we agree upon, so I want to move forward with that.
This is mainly in Modoc County, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
Let me go to Modoc County and see what their thoughts are on all this.
So I would think that this probably fits right in with what the current Tri-Counties group, the five supervisors and commissioners, have been working on, and I would, if you're willing to accept a motion at this point, Madam Chair, I would move that MODOC go on record as supporting the involvement of Supervisor Byrne and myself in the capacity of the Tri-County Working Group to continue investigating the opportunities with Clear Lake.
Second.
You have a motion and a second. Clerk of the Board, please call the roll. Supervisor Starr?
Aye.
Supervisor Cavasso?
Aye.
Supervisor Byrne?
Aye.
Supervisor Coe?
Aye.
Supervisor Rhodes?
Aye.
Motion carried. Commissioner DeGroot, where are you at with
this? So, Moss, actually, just a couple of questions. So, as you mentioned, Clemens County has engaged a firm, Caldwell something or another, to conduct a study related to groundwater storage. I think that they're trying to do some more of a comprehensive study just on water storage in its entirety. How was this different than that? And do you think that could be added to their scope of work because of there's a tight nexus to it? Or do you think this is something entirely different?
Well, I'm closely in discussions with Jeremy and his right. team on at Brown and Caldwell. And I think they're a great asset. I think they should continue to do the work they're doing. I know Jeremy approached it from the standpoint of focused on groundwater in particular.
Right.
To the aquifer storage and recovery.
Right.
And without going into the details, that's something that we do need to continue to look at, and it's a field unto itself. Clear Lake and, you know, potentially looking at, let's face it, you know, potentially $100 million, $200 million reservoir, that's a whole nother ball of wax. And so, but to your point, I think it's a good one in the sense that there is, and we all know it, we don't know exactly what they are, but we can see it across the landscape, and we're doing it in part already, a suite of projects or a group of projects that would fundamentally improve our situation, if not, and probably not solve the whole problem, but certainly improve our situation. The question about how we get those suite of projects that will work together is one that, you know, Fish and Wildlife Service is grappling with across the basin as a whole, and then I think we, within the Klamath Project, within the Tri-County area, need to grapple with respect to the Klamath Project. Exactly how all those various processes come together and get united into some kind of, and I'll use the term, integrated plan is a question that remains to be seen. I do think we have the right group of leaders who are solution-oriented and who are able to roll up their sleeves and come up with projects that are workable. So the key is how to integrate those things, and I think it's more of a informal process, but we'll know we're trying to get some of the people who come from examples have done this elsewhere, CalFed, Yakima, places in the Midwest, to provide input as to how we can structure these kind of processes, and some of those groups will come together in this room here in the coming weeks. But to your point, we need to move forward on all those processes and just make sure that they're integrated.
Okay. So this wouldn't necessarily be the same as the stuff that we're already working on, and there wouldn't really be a nexus between the two to be able to, like, just add it on to the work that we've already commissioned.
So it's a good question, and kind of a technical question in terms of the contract.
Right. Yeah.
But
contracting wise, yeah, that's easier.
It could be conceived that way, and it could be conceived that way in terms of the planning process.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is important. Without going into the details, I think we all know it. We've got similar reasons sitting in this room. That it'd be broader than just one county or one district or one little area. And so that's where I think the tri-counties are particularly important in this respect, in terms of representing all ends and all parts of the basin.
So the ask today is just really to form a group to start talking about how do we even look at this and what studies should be commissioned? I guess I'm a little confused.
Well, following the example elsewhere, this would be basically a steering committee that would, you know, subject to their input and further direction from the counties,
mm-hmm.
would conceivably go get additional funding if necessary, or work through existing funding sources and existing planning processes to pursue storage on the Lost River, offstream, onstream, et cetera.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yep.
Supervisor Gross?
No, thank you. I know in 2011, the Bureau of Reclamation did a study of all the possible storage, and the two that they approved, the plans they approved, one was Clear Lake and one was Gerber, were given highest ranks. Go ahead.
Sorry, just a technical point on that.
Yeah.
The ones that they identified there with respect to Clear Lake and Gerber were simply developing wells that
yeah.
would pump into those reservoirs. The idea was that there was a sustainable groundwater source that could be utilized to add to the volumes in those reservoirs. But yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was around 8,000 acre feet. They said right. would be, you know, permissible for each one. I hear a lot of talk about Clear Lake. You know, people, you know, different groups talking about ideas. So yeah, I'm full bore on moving forward on this. But that I can't give the same motion that Supervisor Coe gave with the same style. Supervisor Kossoff and I be appointed to that working group.
Michael?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are you you're motioning that?
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, second. Yeah.
Supervisor Hogan?
I'm all for it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Passes, Wendy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Moss, thank you.
Yeah.
Leslie, do you want to wrap it up?
Yes, thank you. So again, I just want to thank everybody for being here today, especially the three boards and especially the irrigators in the room. I know it's the busy time of year, so I appreciate you taking a huge chunk of your day out to be here. And I believe we got some things accomplished and some items on our to-do list. And before this meeting adjourns, I did receive a request from our public information officer, Ali Kutzer, to get a photo of the three boards. So if we could do that before you guys disperse, that would be great. And that's all I have.
Okay, so before I wrap it up, I'd just like to say thank you, everyone, for showing up. I know me and Commissioner DeGruy had a conversation in St. George about this can't be a one-off type thing. So hopefully we'll start talking about maybe doing it once, twice a year, a little bit more regular schedule, maybe a preseason, postseason, see how things went. Because this is, you know, the situations and the things we're dealing with don't end today, they continue on. So just want to know that we've had that conversation about that, Jones. All right, meeting adjourned.
Wendy? Allie, where do you want the picture?